Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Inside Indy Sports Podcast. I'm Tyler James, and I'm joined once again by the one and only Eric Hansen. Together, we cover Notre Dame football, recruiting, and more for InsideIndySports.com on the Rivals Network. The transfer portal deadline has passed without much noise from Notre Dame in terms of the entries, but the Irish are making plenty of moves on the recruiting trail. Four-star cornerback Dallas Golden committed to Notre Dame on Sunday. Then on Wednesday, the Irish landed Australian punter James Rendell, who will join the program in June. To discuss Notre Dame's latest recruiting developments, we reached out to our old pal Tom Lemming, longtime college football recruiting analyst and the man behind the Prep Football Report magazine. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Anytime, Tyler and Eric.
Tom, let's start with Dallas Golden. What kind of player is Notre Dame getting in him?
I loved him. I saw him last year. Then I went down to he was supposed to meet me at Tampa Bay Tech with the other top players, including the running back that Notre Dame has committed. And he kept calling, you know, Miami's keeping me here, keep me at his high school. Kept him there for 2 hours, and I didn't want the other guys to wait, so I went to his school the next day. As soon as I get there, he comes out with his coach, who's from Chicago, Coach Seal. And then Florida State lands on a helicopter right outside. And I acquiesced a bit. He's coming in. And Mike's a good guy, the head coach of Florida State. So I interviewed him, and then we came back in. And what I realized, he was leaning heavily to Notre Dame, but someone had put out that he was going to wind up at Notre Dame. What do they call those things? They guess where
crystal,
they're going to go.
Crystal balls or future cast or there's all
he was crystal
of...
balled. And everyone knows that crystal balls come usually from the coaches telling the writer they're going to get him. So he got mad at that. And that's why I think he took a little bit longer to commit, even though he had all these schools. Because when I first interviewed him, I have the kids for about 10 to 15 seconds say their favorite schools. And almost always they come off the top of their head because they try to surprise them with it. But he had just been talking about how he was upset that he thinks Notre Dame is telling people they got him and you can't count your chickens before they're hatched, stuff like that. So first time I did it, he mentioned his top five schools, didn't even mention Notre Dame. I go, have you dropped him just because, yeah, no. He goes, can I do it over again? So he did it over again and had Notre Dame in the mix. So obviously they were there. He's at same school that Keon Keeley was at.
Right.
I think the coach is Notre Dame friendly. And so obviously the Reeder family also is very influential there. So that helped Notre Dame. He's a terrific athlete. He can play wide receiver, corner, safety, return kicks. He's a big, big catcher in Notre Dame. He's a four-star plus guy with five-star type of potential. So it's another big catch for Coach Mickens.
So if he ends up at cornerback, Tom, what do you – can you compare him to the guys already on the roster? The two guys come in Hobbs and Moore, and then – maybe the three guys that are playing a lot, which are Mickey, Ben Morrison, and Christian Gray. How does he compare athletically with those guys?
I think he's better than the two that are coming in as an athlete. And I think he compares favorably. Morrison, I gave 4-star plus two also when I saw him out in Phoenix as a high school junior. He's a little taller than Morrison, and he's just as athletic. I really liked his explosive moves when you watch him on film, and I watch it with him and his coach, and he moves, he can really run, but he's also very instinctive, and that's what you need to be if you're a corner, and you got to be confident. And he's a confident young guy, very nice guy, but very confident. And if there's one position you need confidence besides quarterback, that's at cornerback, because you know they can always get beaten by guys running forward. They've got to run just as fast backwards, so it's a little bit more difficult. But I do think that he's as good as Morrison was coming out of high school, and that's saying something.
Wow.
Yeah, Tom, in terms of, you mentioned Mike Mickens doing a good job with Dallas Golden. He already has Cree Thomas in the class as well. I think the top remaining target is Mark Zachary out of Indianapolis, who I think Notre Dame's in good shape with. If Notre Dame can get Zachary to join Golden and Thomas, how good of a trio is that?
You know, that'd be another great catch. Zachary's an outstanding player, number one player in Indiana. Notre Dame normally does very well when they recruit a player from Indiana all year, and that's what they've done with Mark. And I was just talking to his coach because I'm going to have a big get-together there on June 8th for the guys after him for 26 and 27. And he didn't want to, you know, say that Zachary's definitely going to Notre Dame, but Notre Dame's done a great job. They're in the mix, and I would say that if I had a guess, I don't like to be one of those guys that say, okay, I'm going to predict. because then one of the coaches at Notre Dame hasn't told me they got him yet, so or else I do that. But I think Notre Dame's going to probably wind up with him.
I probably should save this for later, but I don't want to forget it because somebody asked me this in chat, and I figure you would know the answer. So they were very impressed with some highlights that they saw of Deuce Knight from a recent 7-on-7 event that he was in. And they asked me about his arm strength relative to other former Notre Dame quarterbacks. How would you stack him in terms of just arm strength? And then have you seen improvement in his game since the end of last season, or have you noted that?
No, I haven't seen any improvement. I think he's a five-star waiting to happen, but he's not a five-star yet. And when I watched his games on TV last year, and I was surprised at how poorly he did. He had a good arm, but he wasn't real selective in his passing. He wasn't accurate, but he was playing good teams. He sure can run, and he's a legit big guy, 6'5" and a half. And I think a guy like that is a guy that Geno could work with and Mike Denbrock could work with and turn him into a Heisman candidate. He's probably got as much potential or more than anybody that would be on the team right now, quarterback-wise, but he's not as far along as the other quarterbacks, especially like CJ Carr and Steve. So I think that, but potential, it's through the roof. But if you watch him, he's a nice kid too. I always worry about a guy like that who's in Southern Mississippi, and you got Auburn and Ole Miss and Mississippi State and Alabama, all these other schools that could throw a lot of money at a kid like that. So I think if he winds up going to Notre Dame, what a great character guy that he gives his word. He's coming to one school and he's going to stick to it, but got to keep your eye on him all year because he is from the deep, deep South. And those people down there, they'll be relentless when it comes to coming after him.
Let's say that he comes to Notre Dame. Only, you know, Riley Leonard ends up starting this year. He's gone after this year. And he comes in, and you got CJ Carr, Kenny Minchie, and Steve Angeli, theoretically. Who do you think would emerge from that group as the 2025 starter? And would Deuce Knight be seriously in the mix, or is he just need more development before he's going to be a serious contender to start somewhere?
I would think CJ Carr would be the guy that emerges from that mix. So Steve is a very efficient, good quarterback. CJ's got a little bit more ability, but he doesn't have as much experience. And I don't think Deuce would be in the mix yet. I don't think he's a polished enough quarterback that, especially with the kind of talent that Notre Dame's bringing in, and they're expected to be in the mix for the national title the next couple of years. I think Deuce would really benefit himself by sitting out a year, learning under Geno and Denbrock, watching the other quarterbacks go. As I said, he's got a higher ceiling probably than anybody. However, he's got a ways to go when it comes to being a polished quarterback. Just watch him on film. He throws a lot of bad passes. He's not as accurate as the other guys are yet, and he's not as mature. But again, athletic ability-wise, he's got more than anybody.
Tom, Mike Denbrock, I feel like his impact on Notre Dame in terms of the recruiting trail hasn't totally been felt yet, but it seems like his presence is being discussed a lot. When I talk to recruits, do you get a similar sense of that when you're traveling the country, talking to all these kids in terms of what they think Notre Dame's offense can be now that Mike Denbrock is the offensive coordinator?
Absolutely. You know, Mike's got a lot to brag about, and with the Heisman Trophy quarterback, that prolific offense at LSU that he developed really. And Mike's always was a good recruiter at Notre Dame before, at Cincinnati, wherever I've known him. He's always been an efficient and hardworking recruiter. And I think that's something different for them at the offensive coordinator position, something they haven't had over the past 3-4 years. And I think that you're going to see a difference. Mike's been bouncing around the country. I know he was here in Chicago a little bit looking at Trey Turner, a quarterback up north of me. And he's going around the country. So he's working at it. Of course, he should. Him and Al Golden are getting paid a mint. They should be doing all their jobs. And Al's also been Al was always one of the great recruiters. I even gave him a Lemmy back on my TV show years ago. Sort of a joke is that, I mean, we had and matter of fact, because CBS was so cheap, they gave little tiny trophies like this size. So when I brought it down to Al and we did the show, we put it 5 feet real close to the camera to make it look real big. So, but Al made a big joke about it, but he was a great recruiter. We have his recruiter of the year when he was at Miami and Temple. And when he was at Virginia, he was always a great recruiter, and he still is. He works at it. He's got a great work ethic, as does Denbrock. So having coordinators that actually work at recruiting is a major plus and something different that Notre Dame hasn't seen in years.
Tom, before I ask my next question, you mentioned this to us before we got on the air here. Tell us about your latest trip, how many miles it was, how many states, how many kids you saw.
11,000 miles in 25 days. I saw over 300 players, 20 states, and absolutely no rain or bad weather, which was unbelievable. I never run into that. You know, the tornadoes came after me down in Louisiana and Alabama, and then the floods came before me in San Diego and Southern California, and the mudslides came after me in Wyoming. So I avoided all that. It was just, thank God, I prayed a lot after that, because usually I run into some tornadoes or even hurricanes or mudslides or big snowstorms like I had last year in Wyoming and Utah, but nothing at all. It was a fantastic trip. I saw just about everybody I wanted to see everywhere west of the Mississippi, and then including states like Alabama and Tennessee and Kentucky.
So I would imagine the 11,000 miles didn't include a trip over to Australia, but I'm wondering what you think about, because Notre Dame's not the only school that's doing this, going to Australia and getting these guys that have played either Australian rules football or soccer or something from Australia. They got James Rendell last night. What do you think about that trend? And what do you think that means for American punters? I guess I don't know how much evaluation you do of punters.
If there's a great one, I go look at them, but not too many, maybe two or three a year. And but the punny, you know, the guy runs up in Wisconsin, Oshka, I'll go up there to watch him, Whitewater, and he brings a punny cap because he punted for Seattle Seahawks. But over the time, I don't see him. But I think it's a great addition. I think Notre Dame should do that. Australian League's football, those guys then are trained to be punters, not American punters, but to kick the ball. And that's why they're so good. I just thought it was great to send our special teams coach all the way down to Australia. Not only look get him, but maybe look at some guys over the next couple of years that could be the next great punter. Because I just think it's fantastic. And, most like Americans are born hand-eye coordination most of the time. Australians, foot-eye coordination, just like soccer players. And I think they're trained to kick the ball like that. It's a different ball, but they're still trained to kick it. So I think it's a great idea, and I think this Rendell will be a great addition to Notre Dame.
Tom, Notre Dame has sort of made a pretty drastic shift, I think, in specialist recruiting, in that they haven't been as active in terms of bringing in punters and kickers on scholarship as freshmen, and have been more interested in going the transfer portal route. Now we see them going to Australia for a punter. Do you feel like the transfer portal has really changed how specialist recruiting is being handled nationwide?
Tyler, not just specialists, but everybody. I'm feeling bad for the high school players. This lady I know here in Chicago, Linda, her son was a player I thought was a great player 2 years ago in St. Charles. And player of the year in the conference, 6'1", 195 safety, could hit, he can run. Got no offers because most schools now are given 15 to 18 high school. That's it. And then the rest go to a lot of schools, like Colorado, almost only five high school and 20 transfers for a year. So this kid goes to Iowa State, and guess what? He started as a true freshman, and they gave him a scholarship finally. He should have been scholarshiped at other schools in the Big Ten and all that, but they weren't even looking at a guy like that because, you know, most of them finish early, and then they go right to that portal to try to bring 7 to 10 guys in a year, which cuts down one-third of the top high school players getting scholarships. And I think that's a shame, and hopefully it changes, but at least from, you know, they'll start going down different levels. And now the portal goes players, maybe even lower Division One schools or Division Two, but if they see that they're athletically inclined or someone that could play for them later on, they go after them. But it's changed the whole face of college football recruiting, and I think in a bad way, because high school players that deserve scholarships are not getting them right now.
Speaking of portal guys, I would imagine when you, like, I think you were at the spring game, Notre Dame spring game, and you see Chris Mitchell running around. I'm curious what you thought. Wow, if you even remembered him from high school. And then I'll let you comment on that as you look at these transfer portal guys, if a lot of them are transformed players. But I want to talk about the two guys coming in June as soon as you get done answering that.
Well, Chris Mitchell was in my magazine. I think I'm the only one that actually wrote about him. Both the transfer guys, the receivers, were in my magazine as three stars and ball players that I thought were good, but maybe not the knockout guys. They developed later on. That's what I mean about the transfer portal. Schools like Notre Dame, who are the top dogs, can look at other smaller Power Five schools and say, hey, you transfer here, the word gets out, come over here. So it helps Michigan, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Penn State, and all the, you know, several of the Southeast Conference schools, along with USC and Oklahoma, schools like that. But for the most part, Notre Dame will benefit from the transfer portal, but a lot of the other schools are going to be suffering.
So my follow-up to that then is there's two of them that are coming in June. Bo Collins, who I think was a pretty big-time recruit for Clemson, and then Rod Heard the second, who's coming in from Northwestern. I'm curious what your evaluation was of them when they were coming out of high school and maybe their fit with Notre Dame.
Well, Rod Heard was, I think, from Houston, and I really liked him a lot. I gave him three-star plus. Bo Collins was four stars coming out of the powerhouse Bosco. He was nationally recruited by everybody. He just did not turn out to be the great player everybody thought he was going to be. He was lacking, and he was a 4'6 guy back in high school. And when you see a wide receiver 4'6, he's got to have tremendous hands and moves because most of the guys are 4'4 and 4'5, the elite guys. But right. We gave him four stars because he was at Bosco and he was excelling. Sometimes when you excel at Mater Dei and Bosco in California, a lot of times it's because your teammates are also excelling and you just kind of go along for the ride. Collins was a good player, but he's proved to be just that, a good but not the great player.
Tom, we learned what the NFL thought of Notre Dame's players last week with the NFL draft. There are seven players drafted. I'll give you a list here in a second, but I'm curious which of the guys who were drafted surprised you the most in terms of how well they played during their career that maybe outperformed your expectations for them as a recruit. The list, to remind you, Joe Walt, Blake Fisher, Maris Leifau, Cam Hart, J.D. Bertrand, Audric Estime, and Javonte Jean-Baptiste.
Well, Baptiste, I thought, as a three-star. Joe Walt was only three-star plus. I made a big mistake with him, but he was a tight end. And he wasn't that big when I went to see him. He was, you know, his dad was there. So he did have the bloodlines, and that was my mistake. A lot of times, these guys with the bloodline, he got much bigger. When I saw him as a junior, he wasn't, I think, 240 or something like that. You were still thinking of him as a tight end, like his dad in high school. His dad was a tight end. And, boy, he really exceeded my expectations, turned into a great player. And what I understand, just a great kid, too. And really happy that he wound up in the top 10 picks. Just a great player. But, again, I probably missed the boat on him. I did have Blake was a five-star player, as I think most people had him. And I had seen Blake as a sophomore junior coming out of Indianapolis. And Bertrand, I went to his Catholic school in Atlanta. If you remember, they had three really good players that year. I remember the coach telling me, I think JD's my best player. He was the third ranked, according to the internet sites. But with the coach telling me he's our team leader, he does this right, does this, I bumped him up at the end of the year as a four-star just from completely what the coach was telling me about him being a captain, a team leader, making all the plays. And he turned out that way at Notre Dame. He's not the best athlete, but he sure was a very good player.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard Raheem Morris, the coach of the Falcons who drafted J.D. Bertrand, he called him Captain America.
I didn't hear that. But he was a player that I raised up because of what his coach told me.
So, Tom, Notre Dame's offensive line is really the one position group where you kind of go, we're not sure how this is going to turn out in August, September, October, and so forth. And we didn't expect a finished product in the spring, but from a pure talent standpoint, when you look at, especially let's look at the tackles, Jagza, Emil Wagner, Tosh Baker, and let's even throw Sullivan Apsher in there. Where does their talent level compare to the tackles that Notre Dame has been recruiting? And do you feel at least good that at some point those guys are going to be pretty good, whether it's on August 31st or down the road?
I think it's a great group of players. These are big name guys that everybody wanted. Offensive line, Notre Dame doesn't have to worry. Then they got the three tackles coming in next year. It all comes down to just the development now of these offensive linemen because they certainly have the athletic ability. They were nationally recruited. Most people wanted them. I think when it comes to offensive line talent, Notre Dame's got to rank at the very top. Again, experience is going to play a big hand in all of it. I think Jagasaw, playing the bowl game really helped him out. But he's still, you know, that was just his first starting job at left tackle, and that's the toughest position. So we're going to have to wait and see. But I think that might be the big question this year. They seem to have talent everywhere, including the offensive line, but it's not as far developed. So I just think hopefully they could work together in unison off season and really get things going, because if the offensive line gets going, I think Notre Dame will be unstoppable this year.
Do you think Garrabby Lambert is good enough to get in the two deeps at some point, as young as he is, or do you think he's just down the road?
No, I think he's should be in the two deep by the end, at least by midseason. I think he's that talented. I do remember Harry Hiestand telling me that, because I went out to see him as a sophomore, then I went back to Boston as a junior, and he thought he was going to be, could be a number one draft choice. He's got that kind of athletic ability, and he's a ball player that I think picked things up quick. He's a smart kid. And again, it just comes with experience and working, but the athletic ability wise, he's right in there with Jagasaw and Wagner.
Tom, in terms of the needs left in Notre Dame's class and what it has, I think people are most interested in what's going on at wide receiver. Notre Dame already has three commitments with Elijah Burris, Jerome Bettis Jr., and Sean Terry. What do you think of that recruiting trio for Notre Dame at receiver, and how much more help do you feel like they need at that position?
I think it's good, but not great. And I think you'd like to see him bring an elite wide receiver. There's good enough out there. I was out in Bishop Gorman, and he's still out there, the big receiver. And I was really impressed more this year than I was last year, because he ran a sub 11 flat 100 meters, which is amazing for someone that size. Mm-hmm. He's very athletic. Coach said he timed him in a 4.4, which is hard to believe at that size. But if it is, that's the kind of guy Notre Dame needs. They've always lacked great speed at wide receiver. They bring in the big red zone type wide receivers that can catch the ball physical, but they need somebody that can spread the defense. And I think if they could land one of those kind of guys, that could really help them. Mike Brown's a good recruiter for sure, but I think sometimes you just never know the guys are going after. I was curious about the kid down in that they got committed downstate Ohio, because he's out in the middle of nowhere. I stopped at that school 2 years in a row, but I didn't go this year because the coach didn't bring him out a year ago. I always ask him, you got anybody else? So he must have just exploded as a junior. And you got to want to go to that town. You got to maybe it's a ways away. Although they did play an NFL game there. Chicago Bears played there in 1922. So at that same stadium. So, but
against Ironton High, probably.
Yeah, Ironton High. And, the kid's pretty good on film. He's not real big, though. And you don't know about the competition down at Ironton. And most people, just go down there to, if they want to look for that creature that they made that movie about in West Virginia. It's because it's right across the river from there. But I think he's got some ability as a small, kind of a quick wide receiver. But you like to see him bring in a guy with a little bit more size that can run a 4.4, even a 4.3.
Tom, last one from me is, when you were in all these states and all these miles and so forth, what's the vibe about Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman compared to, let's say, toward the end of the Brian Kelly era? Is it similar?
I think it's a little, it's definitely recruiting wise more. Brian Kelly, I always thought, was a good coach. He was a good recruiter when he wanted to recruit. But at Notre Dame, I don't think his policy was really not to call players during the year and work on them, which was always a bad policy when you got Nick Saban and Urban Meyer and all the other coaches calling kids all year round. And a good example was the running back from St. Augustine, who's a big star in the NFL now in Louisiana. I saw him right after a sophomore year, and I'm sitting there watching film with him and his coach. The 1 hour I was there, Nick Saban called Les Miles from LSU and Lane Kiffin from USC. And they kept telling him, because you can't call the kid directly, he was only a sophomore, Leonard Fournette, I'm talking about. So then they called us and make sure he calls us every week. They were already calling him. So even if Notre Dame wanted Leonard, I'm not sure he had the grades, but Kelly would never have done that. And so they would have been out of the mix before it even started. And you see that with a lot of that's why Kelly never really landed a top 25 guy that I can remember, maybe without connections. And I think that's the thing. Marcus can do that, even though he got hit finally, with all this NIL stuff, which kind of set him back a year ago with Keelan Keeley and some of the other guys. But I think they're kind of catching up with that. And I do see them in with some of the impact players now. Maybe top 25 guys, no, only because those guys are, looking for even more money And I don't think Notre Dame is at that stage yet. But still, there's enough great players out there if you do enough evaluating and working on the guys that Notre Dame could win a national title now. I actually believe Notre Dame's talent right now is as good or better than Michigan's talent from last year that won the national title. It all comes down with a little luck. You got to, if they beat A&M, I think Notre Dame could run the table and get that offensive line going with more, much more confidence and everything else. I think they certainly have the player, quarterback wise, obviously, is if Leonard doesn't come through, then maybe they could be in trouble if they don't have one of the younger guys starting. But overall, talent wise, they're right there, Notre Dame. They're on the verge of being one of the elite teams.
Well, all right, Tom, that's all we have for you today. We really appreciate you taking time to talk to us. If folks want to get their hands on a 2024 summer edition of the Tom Lemming Prep Football Report, you can order those at tomlemmingprepfootball.com. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Take care, guys. Talk to you later.
Take it easy.
Before we get to our question segment, I wanted to remind our listeners our subscription promo for InsideIndySports.com. We're offering a 30-day free trial to our podcast listeners who want to try out a subscription to the site. That will get you access to all of our premium content, the Insider Lounge message board. You don't have to wait for the next podcast to ask us a question. You can take advantage of this offer by using promo code NDPOD. That's N-D-P-O-D. When you sign up for a subscription to the site, you can also find a link to the deal in the podcast description or show notes. All right, now it's time for questions. You can submit questions to us on Twitter or the Insider Lounge message board before every podcast. I'm at TJamesND and Eric's at EHansonND. First one I have for us, Eric, is from Bob_Oxnard on the Insider Lounge. He has two questions. When was the last time that mediocre quarterbacking on scout team held back the development of a Notre Dame team? And two, will our 2024 team have one of the best scout team quarterbacks in ND history?
For me, it's hard to pinpoint that exactly. I think it's easier to point out the opposite when a scout team quarterback was super useful because usually the coaches talk about it. And last year was one of those examples when Kenny Menchie played the part of Caleb Williams ahead of the USC game. In kind of general terms, I think early in the Brian Kelly era, there were some issues with scout team quarterbacks, including when Notre Dame played Navy. And eventually, Kelly turned to former assistant coach Bob Elliott, who moved in an administrative role. And Bob came up, helped them revolutionize the way they, the entire way Notre Dame got ready for Navy, including having a special scout team just to run Navy plays that would run those all year long. Mm-hmm. And then it's an approach that the Irish still use today. And then the second part of that, I would imagine Anthony Rezac, Teddy Rezac's twin brother, will be the guy that most of the time is the scout team quarterback when not facing Navy. I think they may occasionally pull CJ Carr or Kenny Minchie for certain opponents.
Yeah, I mean, if all four of those guys are still on the roster, Kenny Minchie and CJ Carr are going to have to spend some time down there. You can't just have four quarterbacks. There are three quarterbacks standing around watching the first team offense. That's just not a good use of their time. I think they'd be better off getting scout team work and doing stuff than just standing there watching. So, I think those guys will get some reps if we enter the season with all four quarterbacks, because at this point that seems to be the case, because the transfer portal window has come and gone without anyone entering the portal. But yeah, in terms of like the last time a mediocre quarterback held Notre Dame back, I don't know what that is. I don't know how to judge that. I've never heard a story like that. I think they have capable guys back there, and I just don't think that they're even when they have good guys, they're just are not always going to get the same sort of look from a scout team that they're going to get on Saturdays. All right, next question is from Marie Biafore at Biafore_Marie. Any thoughts on why there were so few transfers out this spring?
I had this conversation with someone at ND yesterday who's in the position to know. One reason that's not widely circulated is how the incoming transfers rave about how great the ND culture, et cetera, is compared to where they were coming from. And this includes Power Five schools. And I think that casts an impression on players that, you know, are considering a transfer and saying, well, and then I think also there's some value to getting that ND degree. Notre Dame, when they're recruiting, is really hitting the 4 for 40 angle hard. And for some kids, they're pretty close to getting that Notre Dame degree. We saw Tyler Buchner and Drew Pine come back to Notre Dame to get their degrees this spring. And so they want to get that degree or be very close to it before transferring. I think there's two other factors for me. The excitement of this year's team possibly being in the playoff and the 12-team playoff is enticing, and people are excited about that than rather going to a place where your program is going to be irrelevant. You'll play a lot, but you may not even get to a bowl game. And then the last thing for me is I think Notre Dame has become much more competitive in the NIL space than I think a lot of the fans have feared. You know, Tom was talking about maybe not top 25 guys, but in terms of transfers, I think Notre Dame has been pretty competitive and keeping guys on their roster that they're not easily lured away.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of things about Notre Dame's program that make it attractive for players to want to stay here. I also think some of the names, I mean, we try to not talk about names and specifics publicly. Like, obviously, Eric and I have plenty of conversations that we hear about things behind the scenes. But I think a lot of the people that would be in a position to transfer out, I don't know that there's a lot of them that are like, okay, what is a better situation for me? Am I going to be able to play right away? And if I'm looking for a place to play right away, how much farther down the list of like priority, like big time schools, am I going to have to go down in order to find that? The quarterback situation is certainly unique. I'm surprised. I've been on board of saying I'll believe four quarterbacks will be on Notre Dame's roster in the fall when I see it, but that seems to be the case now. And I think, obviously, you see Steve Angeli as someone who understands what he could do if given an opportunity, and believes that still exists for him. And so I think that all sort of combines into why they're going through. But in addition to sort of the things that Eric sort of laid out, there's a lot of good things going for Notre Dame right now. And Notre Dame's keeping their players happy. All right, next question is from LDL Go Irish on the Insider Lounge. Recent college football champions have had drafted an average of over 10 players per year in the 2 years after they win the CFP. Notable exceptions have been Clemson with Watson and Lawrence. How close is this ND roster from putting in an average of 10 players over a two-year period into the draft? How important is having that level of talent to win a national championship? Do you believe that talent level is necessary? By the way, the last two championships for Notre Dame, 1988 and 1977, fell short of averaging 10 players. Is more talent needed today in the arms race, NIL transfer portal age of college football?
Tyler, I'll let you take that one first because I'm not sure that I understood all the math that's involved. 10 players each of 2 years or 10 players over 2 years?
10 players per year. So in the 2 years after, you have at least 20 guys drafted. That would be high. I think Notre Dame certainly hasn't done that, at least in the seven player draft. I believe nine is the record of the seven player draft, and that was in 1993 or 94 after the 93 season, I think, under Lou Holtz. So do I have confidence that Notre Dame can get 20 guys drafted in a two-year span? I can't say that because that's something they haven't done it before. So I don't know that I could predict that. I mean, I think Notre Dame can get there maybe with one, like next year. I think they'll probably have a pretty good showing if the season goes as planned, and maybe have a chance to get to 10 plus. Would they get another 10 the next year? I don't know that I could feel confident about that right now. I think they're probably getting closer to that. And certainly, I think you have to have that sort of talent. I think the Clemson model I've always felt was more realistic for Notre Dame to achieve. Like, that's what Notre Dame needs to do. Get elite quarterbacks. You can get elite talent around them, but you don't have to have the extreme depth of talent that Alabama and Georgia has. Or even, like, what Michigan did last year, I think, is probably somewhat achievable, too. Although I think Michigan has benefited from the COVID extra eligibility. Like, that was a very experienced team, and I think now maybe the everything sort of comes back and with less experienced players available like that. So I don't know if that how replicable that is, but I think that's another way that you could do it. I mean, Michigan does it differently than a lot of teams in terms of like the obvious emphasis on running the football on defense, which still is always important, but I feel like it's become less important in recent years with the elite teams. So I think Notre Dame's getting in a better spot.
Don't bear that out, Tyler, that running the ball and total defense and run defense are still really important metrics for most of those national champions.
But is that comparative? Like, are teams running for as many yards as they were a decade ago, or they're just ranking comparatively with that's what I'm saying.
I'm saying ranking comparatively.
Yeah. I'm talking about like net total, like offenses are scoring way more points than they did 10 years ago. And I don't think that's because of the rushing numbers increasing in the same way. I think that the rushing
yards, it's not so much rushing for a lot of yards as it is rushing efficiency, that you have lots of yards per carry, that you can run the ball when you have to.
Right.
I think that's the big thing. Teams, and we saw that with Notre Dame, they could not run the ball when they had to against Louisville and Clemson, and it hurt them. And it hurt them against Duke to a certain extent until the very end of the game.
Yeah, so I mean, I think Notre Dame's getting closer. I'm not at a point where I can predict they're going to have 20 players drafted in the next two drafts.
Yeah, I think, there were only 12 aspiring NFL guys on this team, and two of them were specialists. So it's to have all those guys drafted. I mean, Sam Hartman, I think, was pretty close to being drafted. I don't think DJ Brown was, and Thomas Harper tested well. I do think that group next year could be pretty big. This group could have been bigger, but Notre Dame benefits by the fact Jack Kaiser, Xavier Watts, Riley Mills, and Howard Cross all said, I'm coming back. So that's going to make next year's class packed. But I could see there being double digits next year, but certain guys have to play themselves into that. You know, I mean, Marist and JD Bertrand weren't draftable players before this season. And JJB certainly wasn't.
All right. Next question is from Frank Sarah at Frank SE, bunch of numbers. What is the status on the grad transfer cornerback offers?
Well, there's two that are out. Trayshon Devons, who is from Rice, and I think he's the number one target, and they're kind of waiting on his decision. And he does not have a prescribed timeline. He wants this to be a spiritual decision that kind of feels right. And then they put out another one to Montre Miller, who's from West Virginia. I think he only played maybe in one game at West Virginia last year after transferring in from Kent State because of injury. So I don't think they're going to cast a wider net until they see what Trayshon Devons is doing.
Yeah, and I think they got to sort of have to make sure they know what's going on with the roster, right? Like, they're over the scholarship limit now, and with no guys going in the portal, they have to make sure that they can get comfortably to 85 by the fall. So if you bring in another cornerback, that means that's one other person you're going to have that's currently on the roster that's not going to be on the roster in the fall. And so that can make it a bit of a sticky situation. So I think it might be a little bit of a waiting game to see how that plays out in terms of Notre Dame's ability to sort of come through with that and figure that out. I've been multitasking and trying to look up this number. So Michigan's rushing offense actually wasn't that great last year in terms of total yards per game. They had 169 per game. So that was right. that ranked 54th. Florida State 10 years ago, they ranked 28th for rushing for 203 yards per game. So that sort of talks about the decrease in rushing yards per game that happened.
But what was Michigan's yards per carry?
I could find that out. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm working on it. Yards per rush, Michigan. They rushed 4.5 yards per carry, and Florida State that year rushed for 5.63.
So, yeah, I mean, there's been some of the five metrics that I think are important: rush offense, pass efficiency, rush defense, total defense, turnover margin. Michigan was 54th. Before that, Georgia was 19, then 36, 47, 61, and then it was 10, 13, 71. That's the numbers that's been probably least consistent. But total defense, this is going backwards from 2023. Michigan was first, Georgia 10th, Georgia 2, Alabama 32, LSU 31, Clemson 5, and then 1, 8, 3, 19, 3, 1, 1. 60 with Auburn in 2010, then 2, 9, 3, 6, 10. Every one of them are top 25 in the BCS and playoff era, except for Auburn in 2010 and those Alabama 32 and LSU 31 in 2019 and 2020. But those teams were elite in rush defense, mm-hmm. and they were very good in other categories too. Passing efficiency is a big one. The last five champions have been ranked 8th, 6th, 4th, 1st, and 2nd.
All right, yeah, and since I have the Florida State and Michigan stats up, since those were 10 years apart, Michigan actually had a better, in terms of scoring defense, Michigan only allowed 10.4. That might be related to their terrible schedule. Florida State allowed 12.1, and they were the top-ranked scoring defenses those years when they won the title. All right, back to our question here from Marie Biafore at Biafore underscore Marie. Can you give us a little information on the most recent 2025 offers that went out?
That's a Tyler question.
Yeah, I'll jump in here. The two recent offers, which happened within the last week, I believe, are Jalen Wiggins, a defensive end out of Tallahassee Rickards High School. He's been committed to Florida since January. Four-star recruit, number 16, strong side defensive end, number 241 overall in the 2025 class, according to Rivals. 6'5", 257 pounds. Had reported 97 tackles, 31 for a loss, 16 sacks last season. Someone that has been interested in looking at other schools. He's from Tallahassee, so he has visited Florida State several times. He has official visits lined up for Stanford, Florida, and Florida State so far this summer. Maybe Notre Dame can get on that list. Notre Dame needs some more D-line help and is sort of exhausted most of the options that it's been looking into. So Jalen Wiggins, that explains the Jalen Wiggins offer. And then Dylan Robinson is the other one out of California, Laverne Bonita High School. It's the same high school as Noah McHale, a linebacker that Notre Dame has been targeting. He's 6 foot, 390 pounds, had 22 catches for 514 yards and 6 touchdowns. Another sort of underwhelming stat line in terms of receivers that Notre Dame's been going after. But his offer list is growing. He's got UCLA, Utah, Washington, Arizona State, Penn State, Kansas, and Boise State. And the same day that Notre Dame offered, Michigan State, UNLV, and Minnesota jumped in on him as well. So I think some schools have also recruited him as a defensive back too. But as we know, and that's part of the reason why I asked Tom Lemming about it, Notre Dame's still working to add one or two more receivers to the class, and so this gives them another option. There's basically like four guys that are are ahead of him in terms of like the interest and the time spent recruiting, and those would be Derek Meadows, Talon Taylor out of the Chicago area, Tanook Hines out of Texas, Derek Meadows out of Bishop Gorman. That's who Tom Lemming was talking about earlier. And then Javon Boggs out of Cocoa, Florida. So Notre Dame probably wants more than four options for two spots. So now they have maybe a fifth there. We'll see what happens with Dylan Robinson's recruitment. And a plug, if you want this information in a timely manner, this is all readily available to subscribers on the Insider Lounge and stuff that we covered when they received the offers.
I got a follow-up from Marie, just telepathically. She's sending it to me. What's going on with Damian Shanklin? Why does that seem like that's not going to happen at defensive end?
Yeah, I he's been showing interest elsewhere. I don't think that Notre Dame is continuing to pursue there. There's been some things that Notre Dame wanted to make sure were good to continue to recruit him there, and so it just hasn't continued in that manner. I don't think that'll happen. I think I'm a little skeptical in some of the stuff that I hear in terms I'll just come out and say, in terms of academics, I don't tend to trust academic issues that get brought up, especially when it seems like a recruit maybe is starting to trend away for a team. So
that also, was a famous one in the Bob Davey era. Every recruit they didn't get was academic.
I also don't think it's fair to cite academics without knowing all the details, and you're not going to know all the information in terms of what a kid's academic record is or isn't. I think when I talked to Damian Shanklin himself, he did say that he thought maybe it had something to do with a grade slipping, this past semester for him. But, I think if Damian Shanklin wanted to be in Notre Dame's class, I think he probably would end up in Notre Dame's class. I feel like, I'm not exactly sure. I just feel like if they really wanted to happen, Notre Dame recruits guys that they can make happen and get into their class. And so it just it's not going that way. Damian Shanklin's focusing elsewhere. Notre Dame's focusing elsewhere. So, that's what's going on right there.
Okay. Thank you for the follow-up.
All right. Next question is from at Charles W. Wolf. Two questions. What amenity do you think is most needed at the new Shields Center? Are there any updates or rumors on a potential game in Rome?
So for me, I wouldn't consider these. When I say amenity, I want to make sure that I'm saying these aren't luxury items. There's pragmatism and functionality built into all this stuff. So I'm going to, and I think the list is pretty long. I would start with more sports recovery, injury prevention / mitigation. That would be at the top of the list. That helps you get better on the field. And that would be followed by kitchen, training table facilities. And you're like, well, what's a big deal about having a kitchen? You know, they truck in the food for training table from other parts of campus, cater it in. This would make it much easier. And there'd be space for the team to all eat together in the same spot. You know, if you want to go down the list, offices, meeting rooms, study areas, a new weight room that they won't have to share with other sports and schedule around. Those are some of the things. I mean, none of it's going to be like, and they'll do it first class, but I mean, it's not like, you know, a pinball machine or something like that, that, or a slide or, you know, or video game.
Yeah. And an NIL check deposit area.
NIL ATM.
Yeah, I think the kitchen seems like the most obvious thing to me. Folks that haven't been in the Goog and know how that works, there's essentially a staircase that goes from the first floor to the second floor, which is how most staircases work. That the second floor is where their dining area is, but it's basically the hallway that's next to the stairway that serves as like the meal presentation area. It's, yeah, it's a bit congested. It's not very good. Like it's not very conducive to beating a team. I would think that's not my line of work, but having the space for that, having the ability to cook different things on location, to be more tailored to what your needs are. I feel like all those things sort of lend to being a valuable need. And I know folks don't like hearing it when Brian Kelly says it after he leaves Notre Dame, but it was a concern. Whether or not it was the number one concern, I think is a fair contention point, but it has been a need, and it certainly seems that it will be addressed with the new facility.
It helps the nutrition specialists to get their stuff going. Where they eat is in the quote unquote recruiting lounge. And it's not big enough to fit all of them in there at the same time. It's pretty big, but just not big enough. And so, again, they'll have better space for that.
All right. What about rumors on the potential game in Rome?
Rumors on the potential game in Rome, from what we know, that was looked into. And I think what's held that up from actually happening is there not being a suitable facility to have an American football game at this point. I wouldn't write it off for the future if there is a facility that would come into play. But if you wanted to play at the original Coliseum, it's in ruins and there are cats that run around there.
Yeah, I don't like if you're talking about a place to find somewhere to develop, I can't imagine Rome has a lot of room to build a stadium, right? Like you're going to be removing a lot of history if you're trying to find a place to build a stadium. So I think that's the biggest hangup. So I feel like that's unlikely unless somehow they build a floating stadium that floats above everything else in Rome.
They could do that in Venice.
Next question is from Nathan Reynolds at Enforcers 2117. Unless I've missed something, is Marcus Burton not coming back to Notre Dame and going to stay in the NBA draft?
I don't think you've missed anything. The deadline hasn't come up. He has until May 29th, and same with all the other underclassmen, to come back and retain their college eligibility. And there's some events in May he may want to take part in, like the NBA Draft Combine, which is May 12th through 19th in Chicago. So it would seem to make sense to at least stay in the draft through the 19th, if not all the way to the 29th, to take advantage of those things.
Yeah, I don't know. So the only deadline that's passed is the deadline to put your name in that passed. And then so there was 195 early entries who met the filing deadline to be considered. And there's only 60 draft picks. So a lot of those guys aren't staying in the draft pool and they will return to school. But it's valuable to get different feedback and workouts as a result of being in this process. I don't know if Marcus Burton would make the cut in terms of draft combine invites. I don't know. I did not look up what that number is and if it seemed reasonable that he would be there. There's also a G League elite camp. I don't know if that would be something that he would get invited to. There are also workouts that he can do privately with teams, and Micah Shrewsbury can be involved, and there's different ways. I don't know all the ins and outs of that, but there's plenty of things that he can get through from this process between now and May 29th to get what he wanted out of it and also still safely return to Notre Dame without anyone being too concerned about it. All right, our last question is from Michael Kelly at ND Lawyer 1990. Why do we fans love Notre Dame and its football program so much, even though we recognize intellectually that we will likely never win another national title?
I guess for me, Michael, I don't think it's universal. Different people have different reasons, and I'm not sure the majority agrees with you that they'll never win another title. I think one common thread why people love Notre Dame is the perception that Notre Dame competes while being different and for standing for the right things. And they're very proud of that. You know, and obviously if you went to the school, you have an affinity. I'm talking about Subway alums that don't have a connection to the school. Some people are Catholic and like the fact that it's a Catholic school and they like it's a spiritual place, but you know, again, I think the high standards that Notre Dame has and trying to overcome those and competing for national championships is attractive to some people.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot that goes into fandom, right? Like, why do you choose it for a team? I think a lot of it is sort of handed down. It's a family thing. You become a fan of the teams that your parents cheered for, or if they went to school there, those kinds of things. So I think the ability to win a national championship, I don't think informs fandom for many people. And I think as a sports fan, I would call those people bandwagon fans. If you're changing teams to someone who you think is going to win a national championship, that's the epitome of what a bandwagon fan is. So I don't think, that's very looked very highly upon. If you wanted to jump ship and root for a different team other than Notre Dame, I think every Notre Dame fan should make fun of you for doing that. So I think even if you don't think you're going to win a national championship immediately, I think there's always the hope that you can and the possibility that you can. I mean, ask Chicago Cubs fans if they thought they would ever win the World Series again. As a White Sox fan, that I was lucky to experience that in 2005. I'm still waiting for the Bears to win a Super Bowl in my lifetime. Clemson fans,
although they had a good draft.
That's right. We're on the path.
They need to get Ironton on the schedule. Ironton High School.
Yeah, I got to get them back on there. Pad the schedule. I mean, if you asked Clemson fans a decade ago, would they have felt that they were going to win another national championship? Probably not. Like, if you're asking the realistic ones, Michigan fans probably felt that way 5 years ago too. So I think a lot can change. And it just takes a good coach, a good program, and a number of good players to sort of maximize their potential and get together. I think that's why people like the sport of football so much, because it is so team oriented, and everything that goes into making a run at a national championship like that. And whether or not you're into the X's and O's and stuff, I think the pageantry around college football still remains, and that's going to continue to draw in people who've grown up cheering for Notre Dame, and we'll pass that on to their kids as well. All right, that is it for today's episode of the Inside Indy Sports Podcast. If you don't already, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other popular podcast platforms. If you like what you hear, give us a star rating, leave a review, and share our podcast feed with anyone who's an expert in Australian football. As I mentioned earlier, we're offering a 30-day free trial to our podcast listeners who want to try out a subscription to InsideIndySports.com. So please take advantage of that with code NDPOD. We'll continue to stay in our weekly mode with the podcast and keep Football Never Sleeps on Mondays as well for as long as we can. Until then, stick with InsideIndySports.com for all your Notre Dame coverage needs.